So, like, in theory, now, if we have you on the show again in like a month and a half, you could be our second actual game developer on the show.
I could, yeah.
That's pretty exciting.
It's gonna be an interesting time. I don't really fully know what to expect yet. 'Cause they haven't decided what project to put me on, so I guess I'll find out when I get there.
Then you'll probably come on the show and be like, I can't talk about anything.
Exactly. I'd be like, yo, dude, I did something totally sweet today, but I can't tell you what it is.
Hello and welcome to the Exploding Barrel Podcast for Friday, June 10th, 2011. That's right, 2011, not 2011. Today I am your host, AJ Minotti. My brother Mike, as some of you may know, is currently sitting in the Los Angeles International Airport waiting for a flight to Phoenix so he can have an 8-hour layover before his return to Pittsburgh because he was at E3 this week. So, in his stead, I have found the most able guest I could locate, and that is our good friend, Mr. George Kokoris. Say hello,
ahoy.
George.
How y'all doing?
I'm doing well, and I assume our listeners are doing the same.
I better hope they are, since they can't answer me.
that's right. We'll just assume and go on. So, as I mentioned, it's E3 this week. Woo!
Woo!
Wave your arms in the air. And
oh, man.
Just
press conferences. Yeah!
Exactly. We get off on this stuff. So, we're going to have a little more... Basically, it's going to be a combination of news slash let's go topical in this week's show. As we just kind of, you know, go through E3, talk about what was big and exciting and splendiferous.
Right on.
So we'll just kind of hit up the three major press conferences, talk about some of the other announcements and things like that got us all excited. And then, you know, we'll talk about some games we played, get to the Let's Go Topical 2.0 shenanigans, look at the new games coming out next week, and that'll be a show.
Sounds exciting.
So let's get right into it. On Monday, Microsoft started off with their press conference. Now, as is E3 tradition, you know, nothing can stay a secret forever, especially when your own website leaks all your big announcements 30 minutes before your press conference starts.
Oops.
So Xbox.com inadvertently updated its E3 page, like, and it was only live for like a matter of like minutes, but, you know, that's all it takes on the internet.
Yeah.
So we had a few things spoiled, chief amongst them, which was the exclamation point to their conference was the announcement of Halo 4 and ostensibly Halo 5 and 6 because they called it a new trilogy.
Yes.
But this will be coming out in 2012. There was a CG teaser trailer. George, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, you know, it's actually kind of funny because, you know, I knew about the game's existence for a while, you know, largely in part because of my interview. Yeah, I mean, you know, of course the teaser does its job of, you know, showing only the bare minimum. That's enough to kind of get people excited for what's up next. It's essentially a continuation of the legendary ending to Halo 3, you know, which you would only see if you beat the entire game on legendary.
Or you went to YouTube.
Or you went to YouTube, as that too. That thing, the internet, that we never talk about. you know, the front half of the, I'm sorry, the back half of the Forward Unto Dawn that, you know, housing the Master Chief and Cortana, you know, pops out the other side of that portal and is just kind of hurtling towards some unknown world, which I imagine is like a Forerunner shield world or something. And the teaser trailer basically just picks up from there. You know, the majority of Microsoft's conference was very Kinect-heavy, which, as a gamer, is not really anything that's relevant to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's difficult to, you know, kind of talk about this now being an employee of Microsoft, but, I mean, strictly as a gamer, you know, that press conference was not targeted at guys like me.
Right. You know, quick aside, I guess you people probably don't know this. Why don't you tell them what you're going to be doing in a month?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was actually recently hired as a designer at Microsoft Game Studios. You know, there's no final decision on what project they're going to put me on yet. But I may be working at the at Microsoft's Redmond campus on Kinect and Windows Mobile products, or they may be moving me across town to the Kirkland office to work on Halo 4.
Pretty
But
groovy.
yeah, you know, it's going to be a little while before I find out, because they're going to have me working on a lot of things before they put me somewhere permanent.
Right.
But it's still, you know, it's still exciting. You know, like a lot of the stuff that they were showing at their conference on Monday were not necessarily things that interest me as a player, but the possibility of working on any of those projects is still
Right.
pretty exciting.
Now, see, here's what I'll say, because like you know, they have the, like, it seems like a yearly thing now that we're gonna get like a new Xbox experience, and this one, like, it's kind of a marriage of the Kinect hub and the normal Xbox hub, like it's all just one thing now. So like I you know, that's cool. I like that. I'll tell you what I think is gonna be really awesome is the Bing search functionality. I spoke with actually some people I know who got to get a little hands-on with that functionality, and he said like he just did Xbox Bing X-Men. It found every X-Men game, every X-Men movie and cartoon show for download on the Zune Marketplace, every X-Men movie and cartoon show to Zoom to stream on Netflix, like all of it. Like it was just all right there. Because that's always like the complaint you hear about, like the Netflix app, the Hulu app is searching for stuff and there's a chore.
Yeah.
And now you just say it and it's done.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is really going to that's really going to hinge on the voice recognition.
Which so far in the Kinect has been excellent. I mean, you figure if my Android phone can handle it, and it's an awesome experience there, I like to think the Xbox will be just fine.
Yeah, most likely, yeah.
So let's see, the Halo announcement, I guess, everyone kind of saw it coming, was the Halo Combat Evolved Anniversary, which is coming out November 15th. What I'm excited to hear is it's going to kind of do a Monkey Island Special Edition sort of thing where you can toggle in real time back and forth between the original graphics and the all-new graphic engine that they have laid in front of the game. But the underlying gameplay engine is still the Halo 1 engine, so the game will play exactly the same.
The thing that excited me the most about that announcement is that you know, Halo is you know, Halo CE is one of those games that you know, people spent so much time playing that, you know, there was a great deal of fun to be had in breaking the game. Things like the Warthog jump, you know, the
Oh,
discovery
yeah.
that if you set off multiple grenades at once, the physics impulse from the explosions was just added and there was no attenuation. Things like that let you do ridiculous things like launching a Warthog all the way across Silent Cartographer. You know, the team at 343 didn't want to mess with that. So the funny thing about Halo Anniversary is the fact that it's not just that we're talking about, like, you know, we're running the, you know, the Halo 1 engine underneath all of this. What's actually happening is that it's running the entire Halo Combat Evolved game all on its own, and then there's actually a second game engine sitting on top of it that's just doing rendering. So, you know, when you're hitting the back button to toggle between the new graphics and the old graphics, what you're basically doing is you're just telling the game which of those game engines it wants to draw to the screen. But the original Halo 1 game, like the entire game itself, not just the core engine, is running underneath the whole time,
And
which
then,
I
of
think was
course,
a
we're gonna get
fantastic idea.
yeah, and then we're gonna get like, you know, the Xbox Live online co-op. They're going to be going in and adding terminals to the game, actually. So there will be some new content. The one thing with the multiplayer now, and some people are cool with this, some people really don't seem to like it. I'm kind of in the former camp. Is instead of recreating the Halo 1 multiplayer engine and putting, you know, online play with that, they basically are just recreating the maps for Halo Reach, and it's going to be the Halo Reach engine for that. So you'll have armor abilities and assassinations and everything like that. But what I find particularly cool, though, is the game will include a voucher so you could just download those maps into Halo Reach and just basically get those six maps folded into that experience, which I'm all for.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I mean, especially because, you know, and they made a good argument that they didn't want to, you know, they didn't want to fragment the multiplayer population.
Right.
Because obviously, Halo Anniversary does not supersede Reach in any way. And it wouldn't have made sense to have Halo Reach over here and then Halo Anniversary over here and have two completely different multiplayer games, you know, two completely different multiplayer versions of Halo, you know, running like kind of like, I mean, maybe the communities would kind of like compete with each
Yeah,
other
then you
and
got Halo 4 a year away and
yeah, exactly. So I think having the multiplayer work within the Halo Reach engine, I think that's the smartest solution. And, you know, again, the guys who are in charge of 343 Industries are all ex-Bungie. They're guys who stayed behind at Microsoft when Bungie went independent. So at the very least, most of the leads, with the exception of you know, like Ryan Payton, formerly of Kojima Productions, and you know, like a couple of other people. Most of the leads are still from Bungie, so they know that there's a formula that they don't want to mess with, and I think it is, it's almost, I mean, it's almost a certainty that the multiplayer in Halo Anniversary will at least have some game types that make it feel exactly like Halo 1.
They'll have some mutators and things like
Yeah,
that.
exactly. I mean, that would be a relatively trivial thing for them to do, just to duplicate the game balance of Combat Evolved,
Yeah, you
but
just
keep
turn off
it.
assassinations, turn off the armor unlocks,
Yeah,
make the
exactly.
pistol super powerful.
Exactly. And keep all of that within the Reach engine as a game type, so that everything is still kind of working within the same multiplayer ecosystem.
Okay, that's Halo. Let me ask you this too. Do you think that would have been a much bigger deal announcement of Halo 4 if that didn't leak right before the press conference?
I don't know. I mean, it's actually kind of hard for me to predict because,
Because you knew.
yeah, because well, I knew that it was going to happen, and I think, you know, I think everybody knew that there was going to be another Halo game.
Yeah, I think
Otherwise,
what happened
343
is
Industries wouldn't
everyone,
exist.
yeah, cause, well, like everyone knew for sure pretty much that the anniversary edition was going to happen. It seemed like it almost seemed like intentional misdirection. Like they were happy to let those rumors happen because it kind of drew your focus away from the fact that Halo 4 was being worked on, you know?
Yeah. And you know, I think to an extent, you know, I think everybody knew that there was going to be another game in the Halo franchise. I don't necessarily think that anyone knew there was going to be, you know, that it was going to be a direct sequel, that it was going to be Halo 4. You know, it could have been another offshoot or what have you. So, yeah, I mean, I mean, maybe it would have been a little bit more surprising if it hadn't been leaked, but it wouldn't have been like this, you know, completely unexpected megaton out of left field.
All right, so let's see what else to talk about. Well, like we said, a lot of Kinect stuff. And you know they were trying to put more Kinect functionality into core game experiences. Some of the things are kind of trivial but neat, like things like voice control coming to Mass Effect 3. So the hokey side of it is you can basically speak aloud the voice options instead of just picking them with a controller. I've heard one of the BioWare guys try to explain it as don't think that you're speaking for Shepard. But that you're either his shoulder angel or shoulder devil level, like whispering things in his ear of what how to act.
Yeah.
It's
I
it'll have a
think
novelty.
yeah, no, I mean I think that's a, you know, that's a passable justification.
The cooler implementation is what you could do in combat, where you could just say like Liara, singularity, and she'll do it.
Yeah. That's definitely something that I think makes a lot more sense. I feel like a lot of developers, you know, like we have this, you know, we have this knowledge from partly from the Wii and partly from the success of the Kinect. We have this knowledge, sorry, we have this notion that the broader gaming audience is intimidated by controllers.
Mm-hmm.
And while that may be partially true, I don't think it's quite so extreme as a lot of people seem to think it is. And I get the impression a lot of the time that we have developers trying to use voice control for things that are trying to use voice control in situations where it's not making things easier.
Well, like, what did you think of the Ghost Recon stuff they show where you were like, customizing a gun with
right,
your voice?
Right, like the Ghost Recon thing, it's like, on the one hand, telling the machine, optimize for long range, is cool, but it's easy to forget that for a core gamer, for the kind of person
who's going to play Ghost Recon,
a button is easier than saying a whole long sentence. Misguided assumption that using your voice is always going to be easier than pressing a button, and that isn't necessarily the case. In the case of the voice commands in Mass Effect 3, absolutely. That you have the controller, you are controlling Shepard, you're using the buttons for everything that has to do with what Shepard is doing, and then if you need to command, if you need to give a command to one of your party members, then you can do that with your voice. And there is this kind of distinction. You're not having to like pause and go to a little command wheel. In the case of Ghost Recon, being able to like spin the gun around with your hands and verbally ask for a particular loadout will be cool, but I think most people will find the buttons to be faster.
Mm-hmm. Now, I will say, though, the head tracking in Forza 4, stoked.
Yes.
I can't wait for that.
Yes.
The day they announced that game, that's what I wanted.
Yeah. I mean, things like that, things like head tracking, that's... I feel like that's a little bit easier to kind of slip seamlessly into a design without it being superfluous.
Mm-hmm. Plus, did you see the new steering wheel they showed?
The one that you hold in the air?
Yeah, it's like it's kind of like the Wii wheel, except like it's actually a little more substantial than that.
Yeah,
from the people's hands on, I read they say it's surprisingly good.
Huh?
Yeah, people actually seem to think it's not bad.
Might have to give that a shot.
Yeah, I got the real wheel, which is hard to say. So I'll use that. But yeah. Let's see. So what are the Kinect stuff? There was the Kinect Labs that they revealed, which became available that day on the 360. It's basically they're trying to start fostering some of the homebrew PC development and putting it out there for people to actually play with.
Yeah.
So I made some googly eyes on a baseball cap, and I turned myself into an avatar. The Sparkler one, which is the one I wanted to try the most, wasn't up yet. It said coming soon, which, I saw it working. I don't know what they're waiting for with that one.
It may be that it may just take time to port it from the PC to the 360.
I'm not sure. Yeah, that's cool because that's going to use the finger tracking, which we always knew Kinect was capable of, but Microsoft never really kind of acknowledged it till now.
Yeah, we had never actually seen that. We'd never actually seen that in practice.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. There was the typical children's moments. The Cookie Monster game, where even Tim Schafer, as he announced, he's like, cue the fake family, or whatever he said.
Yeah.
At least he had a sense of humor about it. There were the kids playing Kinect Disneyland Adventures. It's like, fly through the coins! Ah, we missed that one! We'll get it next time! It was this year's Skittles moment,
the cringe-worthy child actor moment.
That said, I will totally get that game. Man, am I excited. And here's why. People may not even realize this, but there was a game for the Nintendo Entertainment System that this is basically a remake of. You may not realize it. It was a game where you walked around a recreation of Disneyland, and all the attractions were mini-games. And then there was like an overarching puzzle element, too, inside Disneyland itself. That's basically what this is. And I loved that as a kid. I still like it, actually. So why not get this?
Hey, right on. I can see that as like a modern reimagining of this this older kind of 8-bit Disney experience.
But I mean, having all of Disneyland mapped in 3D, yeah, I'll sign up for that. I've always wanted something like that, so sold. Now, let's see. You know, there are a few other announcements. You know, they showed Lara Croft Tomb Raider and you know, Modern Warfare 3. There was a Gears of War 3 play demo. That, I mean, that game's going to be great. We could all expect that. They announced a port of Minecraft coming to the 360 exclusively using Kinect.
That was it's basically my game of the show.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it might be for you.
As you know, as ridiculous as it sounds, considering that it was just Don Matrick just mentioned it in passing, and then 10 seconds later he'd moved on to something else. You know, I love Minecraft.
Mm-hmm.
I worship that game. It, I mean, not just for how good it is, but for what it represents. You know, it like over I guess the past few years, from writing a lot of code at Full Sail and designing games here, and you know, I mean, also like playing a lot of very different games. You know, I've started to believe very strongly in you know, the kind of philosophy that Minecraft is based on, and you know, and I love that, the whole, you know, thing of like empowering the player and giving them as many things to do as possible, and just, you know, taking the sandbox approach. But you know, because it's written in Java, it's kind of kludgy and slow, and you know, it crashes a lot, and it like eats up a lot of memory, and the frame rate is all over the place. So the idea of being able to play that game on a console, on a fixed platform where it's going to be much easier to resolve performance issues, just the thought of being able to play Minecraft at a smooth frame rate, that's like, all right, cool, I'm done. Game of the show. That's good enough for me.
Nice. Let's see. Then, I mean, the last thing I want to talk about for Microsoft, what I find some of their most exciting announcements, they didn't even announce at the press conference. It came out afterwards. Basically, they're going to be adding cloud storage to Xbox Live.
Yes.
And they're getting kind of rid of the whole gamertag recovery thing where it takes 20 minutes to re-download your gamertag. You just sign in and out wherever you go.
Yep.
Because I move between Xboxes a lot. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And then they announced this thing called Beacons, where they didn't quite have all the details on, but basically you'll be able to like announce on various social networks like, hey, I'm going to play Halo Reach. So if you want to join me, that's what I'm doing.
That's right. Yeah. Then people can use that to actually join up with you while you're online.
Hmm. All right. Anything else from Microsoft you want to talk about?
From Microsoft? No. You know, pretty light on things that are, you know, relevant to the hardcore audience.
I mean, it was a fairly safe conference, I'll say, but I mean, there was nothing offensive about it. I think that's what I'll say.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, I take that back. There was one thing that pissed me off so much so that I almost forgot about it, and that is, and we should talk about it, is Star Wars Kinect.
Oh.
What a fucking train wreck.
I actually tabbed over to another window and that came up.
Ugh. How have we been fucking this up? Since the day the Wii was announced, I was like, oh, make a Star Wars game. And then that never happened, and then they do it with this Kinect thing, and it should work, but,
you know,
I mean, you can see in the live play demo, there's massive, massive lag. And it doesn't look like anything he's doing actually matters. Like, if you just sat there like a spaz, flailing your arms, you'd have just as much success as anybody else in that game.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that, I mean, just when we're talking about the whole idea of a lightsaber game with a motion controller, I think the thing that kind of makes me really sad when it comes to that is the fact that I remember playing Red Steel 2, which, you know, was very much improved from the first game, supported Wii Motion Plus. And the entire time that I was playing it, I mean, that game kind of, like, showed up and disappeared. And, you know, reviews were fairly good, but nobody really paid attention to Red Steel 2. And I remember while I was playing it, the entire time, all I could think was, if this game had a Star Wars skin on it, it would be game of the fucking year. Because it was, I mean, you know, it was a lightsaber game. You know, I mean, the Wii Motion Plus was, I mean, surprisingly accurate. And you had a lot of really fine control. I think it would have done fantastically as a Jedi Knight game. But, you know, instead it just kind of like quietly vanished because the first game wasn't really that well received. So, you know, to see a game like Star Wars Kinect and see that, like, not even getting close to what Red Steel 2 accomplished, it is a little sad.
Well, like, you know, it's not even so much of it has to do with the Kinect integration, which does look kind of janky, but just as a game, like, you know, there's one part where the Jedi are fighting those, like, honor guard droid things that were with General Grievous, who have, like, the weird little electric saber staff things.
Yeah.
And it's like, this guy is wailing away at them with a lightsaber, and they're not breaking their animation. They're just in their animation. They don't change anything they're doing. Like, they're just completely prescripting. You just kind of swing your arm until they blow up. Like, it just looks sloppy.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I don't know. For now, I'm going to kind of look at that and assume rushed press demo.
That's what I want to assume. I want to like this game. The concept is sound. It should work.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess, you know, we're going to have to wait until, you know, maybe like a couple of months down the road because, you know, the problem with E3 demos is that you always have this, like, you know, 30-day sprint, you know, where everybody kind of comes off of full-time development just to finish the press demo. And, you know, so, I mean, when it comes to something like that, I can kind of look at it and be like, okay, maybe that was just a rushed demo. You know, a couple months down the road when they're demoing it for a magazine or a website, maybe then we'll have a more accurate idea of whether or not this game actually is, you know, as lacking as people seem to think it was based on that press demo, you know. Oh, and actually, I also just remember that this was shown at the Microsoft conference. That demo of the new Tomb Raider. God, I hope that they toned down her voice a little bit, because yeah. I mean it was one of those things where, like, if somebody were to walk in the room and couldn't see my screen, they'd think I was watching porn.
Fair enough.
Which makes me a little uneasy, you know. I mean, just hearing, like, you know, hearing that voice, like, you know, the fact that the tone of her voice is kind of in this weird sort of gray area. Of, like, I don't know. That doesn't really sound quite like fear. I don't know. And, you know, I mean, it does kind of come back to this whole kind of, like, creepy torture porn vibe that I got from the first screenshots of the game in Game Informer. And, yeah, I don't know. I'm not really feeling it.
It could go either way. It at least looks like they're taking it in the right-ish direction from where the series has been in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to take a playable demo to really get a clear idea of it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that demo, again, because it's a press demo, had to be really, really linear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there wasn't, like, there didn't look there's much to do. It's
yeah,
pretty much walk forward,
exactly. Everything
hit some
had
QTEs
to be
and do one rudimentary puzzle.
Yeah, everything had to be kind of like paced and delivered in a mm-hmm. particular way. So, I would very much like to see what that game is like when it opens up. If it opens up. If it doesn't, yeah, I don't know. Probably not going to be for me.
Yes. All right, Sony.
Sony.
Well, you know, after they profusely apologized once again,
which, by the way, I think was pretty classy of them.
Yes.
Even made a
nice little joke about it, you know, to thanking their, you know, telling the press that they were welcome.
Telling the press, yeah, you're welcome. You know, the only thing that I feel like they kind of missed was, the way Tretton was speaking He made it sound as though he was apologizing for the network going down, which is not really what people wanted an apology for. They wanted an apology for all of the identity theft. But, I mean, nonetheless, the fact that, I mean, he came out and, I mean, even literally acknowledged the elephant in the room, and, came right out with a, with a sincere sounding apology, like, really, really classy. I gave them, they got major points from me for that.
Right. So let's see. I mean, their big thing, obviously, was, more details on the NGP, or as it is now called, and again, we all figure this out too, the Vita, which I don't
PlayStation
understand
Vita.
that name at all. Like, what is it? What is the genesis of that name?
I don't know. I mean,
I don't even.
Vita, life,
Like,
sure, I don't know.
Vitality, but then that'd be Vita. I don't know.
I don't
It
know.
doesn't sound like a gaming, like, I don't think of a handheld gaming system when I say Vita. I think of, like, an energy drink.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think of an energy drink or a vitamin supplement.
Yeah. Like, call your doctor today about Vita. Vita should not be taken if you're pregnant or taking nitrates for chest pain. Like, I don't know. But major kudos to Sony, where they inevitably got to announcing the price of the system. As people were kind of thinking that, because they said, this can't cost too much more than the 3DS. It might even the Wi-Fi only one cost as much as the 3DS, which was true. They announced $249.99 for the Wi-Fi only model. So as soon as they said that, I sat there and I did get to watch this part of the press conference live. I sat there thinking to myself, all right, here it comes then, $349 for the 3G. And it was
And it was
announced at
$299.
$299.99. Shocked. I literally just kind of sat in my chair and did a little fist pump. Because that's awesome. That is a fantastic price
They
point for that thing.
really nailed it with the pricing there. I mean,
Well,
like 250 bucks. I mean, that's, like the Wii launched at that price.
yeah.
So I mean,
And I
that
think
was
it's a
pretty
good, it's
impressive. I mean, bummer on that AT&T announcement. I mean, that
Yeah,
reaction
where
was
everyone
just
booed.
you could hear the booing. That was just, oh God.
Oh, poor AT&T.
That was
But yeah,
unfortunate.
I think it's just an acknowledgement on Sony's part, and this is something Nintendo refuses to do, and I think it's going to bite them in the ass, that Sony acknowledged, look, we're not just competing with Nintendo, we're competing with the iPod Touch.
Yeah.
And when you compare the $299 Vita to the $399 iPod Touch, it's a pretty damn good deal, actually.
Yeah. No, that's true. And I think, I mean, we can get into this when we get to Nintendo. I do think Nintendo kind of acknowledges that they're competing with Apple, but I don't think they take Apple quite as seriously as Sony does. Sony is much more acutely aware of how stiff the competition from Apple is. I think maybe that may be because they got so burned on the PSP that, that's kind of a harsh lesson now, and they're not
Well,
looking to
that and
repeat that mistake.
Apple or Sony still feels the sting of Apple in the music realm. I mean, you think 20 years ago, Walkman was synonymous with portable music. Now it's iPod. They've already lost one battle to Apple. They don't want to lose another one. But let's see. I mean, they
That's
had the sizzle reel for that. I mean, not a ton more was revealed about it. We just got to see some games in action.
Yes.
Saw Street Fighter Cross Tekken. Ken Levine announced a BioShock game coming to the Vita.
Yeah.
They showed off Uncharted. It's all gravy. I think it's
Yeah.
going to be a phenomenal
I
system.
think, and the other thing, I for whatever reason, I think the things that excited me the most this E3 were the things that were just kind of shown off in passing. Along with Minecraft on XBLA. There's also Wipeout 2048 on the Vita. And of course we all know that I am a shameless Wipeout fanboy. This, I mean, again, just being able to play like yet another Wipeout game. I mean, that pretty much just guarantees that I'm going to buy the system. It doesn't really take much else.
And it'll be able to actually play online with the PS3 version.
Yes, which is also really exciting because, I mean, yeah, okay, cross-platform compatibility. What that also tells me is that, it's probably going to include a lot of the same tracks, which I also dig because the tracks in Wipeout HD are, I think, among my favorites of the entire series. So, pretty pretty fantastic work there. I mean, like the, and I mean, you know, of course you can't ignore the new Uncharted and how drop-dead gorgeous it looks. Oh my God.
I mean, I know it's cliché to talk about water in a video game, but damn. Do you see that water
Yeah,
in
dude,
that video
and
game?
I mean, like, you know, and water like that
On a handheld.
on a handheld. I mean,
It's unheard of. It's awesome.
and all of that on a handheld that costs $250. Like,
Now I've got my
major
3DS
props to
sitting right in
Sony.
front of me. It costs $250. I'm not bitter about it. I like my 3DS quite a bit. But shit, I think about the two, and I'm like, you know, this does 3D. That's kind of neat, and the Mario game's gonna be awesome. But god damn,
Yeah, I know. There's a pretty big gulf between the 3DS and the Vita. I mean, you know, like I like my 3DS. I actually don't own any retail games for my 3DS. You know, I was playing the built-in games and my the same DS games I've been playing. And of course I'm getting Ocarina of Time 3D. And you know, like I mean, even just the, you know, like having a virtual console for the old Game Boy games. I mean, that's kind of worth the price of admission by itself. I've been playing Link's Awakening DX all afternoon.
Me too. I was going to talk about that later. let's see. Let's go back to
But
Sony.
yes, Sony.
Some other stuff they showed. I mean, we got, well, this is just bad planning. First, they show Uncharted, which looks amazing. Then they showed Resistance 3, which looks good, but you put it after Uncharted, and you're like,
Well,
eh.
that's the thing. I mean, Uncharted will I mean, okay. Forget even Uncharted. Naughty Dog will always be a really tough act to follow because those guys are they are absolute monsters. And Insomniac is I mean, you know, Insomniac is also just like absolutely incredible bunch of devs. But I think the big difference is that Naughty Dog is working on Uncharted and only Uncharted. Insomniac is wrapping up Resistance 3 and Ratchet and Clank All for One, and now they're working on Overstrike. And you know, I can, you know, and you know, the thing that I mean, at least what I can say is that it feels like Uncharted definitely has the benefit of manpower over Resistance 3. But I mean, they both looked fantastic. But yeah, it's a little unfortunate that Resistance 3 had to follow up after Uncharted 3.
But I mean, here's to sum it up for Uncharted. I got a text message from Mike this afternoon, and this is what it read: "Just saw Uncharted, period. Holy, period. Shit, period."
Yep.
To which I responded with, "Yay!"
Yeah, well, I mean, it's Uncharted 3,
Is
man.
Uncharted 3.
And you know, and despite the fact that Uncharted kind of represents a type of design that, you know, I'm kind of moving away from personally, it's still just like an absolutely spectacular thing. The thing that that actually jumped out at me, I didn't even notice until I went back and watched it later after a friend of mine pointed it out. That I mean, it's you know, all these little tiny details. Like, if you change direction, Nate no longer turns around right away. He'll take a couple of steps backward and then look over his shoulder and then turn around. Which is, you know, I mean, just like tiny little thing. Okay, yeah, like minuscule detail. But you know, of course, me as a programmer now, I'm looking at this and I'm like, I'm trying to work out all of the math that goes into having him do this animation and make this decision and all this kind of stuff. That kind of attention to detail, I mean, once again, Naughty Dog swinging for the fences and, like, you know, landing it all the way in the fucking parking lot 3 miles away. Just, I mean, absolutely stellar stuff. And the, you know, the water in that, you know, now we're not even talking about, oh yeah, this is great water for a portable. This is just like, holy shit.
It looks wet.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
Yep. Oh, that's gonna be so good. I'm so excited. I love Uncharted so much.
Uncharted's so good.
I know.
I'm fanboying over here.
I know. I'm all geeking out. Let's see, what else do they have? They brought out Ken Levine on stage, and, you know, he was like there, like, I thought Move sucked, but turns out it's actually pretty sweet, and that's why I'm going to put it in Bioshock Infinite. So we had that moment.
Yep.
Let's see, EA and THQ said, like, you know, their games are going to have bonuses come to the PS3. That seems to be what they're pushing is finding ways of incentivizing the PS3 games because they have the Blu-ray disc to put stuff on, like...
Yeah.
You know, Bioshock Infinite is going to have the original Bioshock right there in the Blu-ray. Things like that. Not to my surprise, they announced that Dust 514, the first-person yes. shooter being developed by CCP that ties into EVE Online, is exclusive to the PS3.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, did we really think Microsoft was going to let them create a system that interfaces with a PC and Mac-based MMO?
Yeah. No. Well, you know, and that was the thing, and you know, there were a lot of EVE Online fanboys crying foul, but EVE Online fanboys cry foul about everything because
right.
EVE Online players are by far the single bitchiest audience in video game history, and you know, and I say this as somebody who's been playing EVE Online since 2005, so yeah.
You're allowed to call them little bitches.
Exactly. Mainly because I've shot at very many of them. but the you know, the thing is that you know, a lot of people I mean, like, first of all, were, you know, completely bewildered by the fact that Dust 514 is a console game at all.
They didn't want to splinter the player base on PC.
Exactly, and a lot of people don't seem to understand that. You know, they were saying, oh, well, it's a first-person shooter, it has to be on PC, EVE Online is on PC, so everything has to stay on the PC, and they have this kind of, you know, there is a bit of that kind of, like, PC gamer elitism in there, which, I mean, fine, yeah, I'm a PC gamer too, and yes, I like the fact that my PC is more powerful than my consoles, but really, who gives a shit?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fact is that if they have the EVE Online client and the Dust 514 client both on PC, then, you know, you have this fragmentation problem where, you know, you have, like, these contingents of PC players who, you know, are kind of, like, on one side or on the other, or they might be going back and forth. And it's not broadening the audience for the game at all. And that's really what CCP wants. They want more people playing the game.
Yeah.
So they, you know, their decision was to make it a console exclusive, and that makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
and
you never know. You might get, like, some guy gets this game and the PlayStation really likes it, becomes interested in the world, and they're like, well, what's the ship part like? Then
yeah.
they get in their computer and they get into that.
Exactly, and moves on to the PC version. And, you know, there are a lot of people who would be very interested, because, I mean, I have a lot of friends who would be very interested in sort of participating in this kind of, like, grand galactic sandbox that EVE
mm-hmm.
offers, but the EVE Online client and space combat and how all that works is dizzyingly complicated.
Oh, yeah, I've tried very concerted efforts 3 times to get in that game, and it's hard.
I wanted to really bad.
I really want to play EVE. It's just such a time investment. There's so much to it, and it's just hard to do.
It is. I mean, it's one of those things that, like, I've had to spend, like, I mean, it took me a couple of years to actually reach, like, a healthy equilibrium between my life and EVE, which only came with mastering the game to the point where I wasn't, you know, I didn't have to waste time figuring out what I was going to do or how I was going to do it. And so, you know, you have a lot of people who are very interested in sort of partaking in this kind of grand sandbox, and they want to fight in these enormous wars, and they want to take part in, NullSec Alliance politics, but, like, you know, getting
the mindset that stuff happens on level 2.
Exactly, you know, and getting this, you know, getting this, like, big-ass fucking PC out and installing this client and spending months figuring out how to fucking do anything, you know, that's not for everybody. And I think it's very smart of CCP to open that up to console players and keep that exclusive to console players so that you don't have this weird, like, disconnect between guys playing one, you know, playing on the PC and playing on the console and kind of competing on the same game type. And then, you know, between the PS3 and the 360, Microsoft has never liked external servers. They're, you know, I knew years ago when they first announced the game that there was no way in hell that Microsoft was going to actually allow an Xbox 360 to pass through the Xbox Live infrastructure and hook up to the, you know, the EVE Online data center in London. That's not Microsoft's policy. That's not secure enough for them. And, you know, it was, I feel like it was inevitable from the beginning that it was going to be a PS3 exclusive. And, you know, maybe I can only say this because I own a PS3, but like, I'm totally okay with that. Yeah. Like, whatever. I'm gonna play the shit out of it.
All right, let's wrap up Sony here. Real quick, I mean, they announced the Eco Shadow Colossus bundles coming in September, so hooray.
Yes.
Didn't show Last Guardian, which people were kind of hoping they would. Let's see. They announced they're big, bringing the two God of War PSP games to the PS3. And the other thing they showed real quick, you know, in their continued efforts for 3D is basically their kind of Trojan horse 3D thing where it's a $500, like, 24-inch 3D television that comes with glasses and a copy of Resistance.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, but, I think that's a, you know,
that's not bad.
That's a pretty smart idea. I think...
I mean, I could say, if I was going to be in college and that was existed, I'd get one.
Yeah, I
go
mean,
my
I,
dorm. Yeah.
I honestly think that, I mean, when it comes to that little display, I think the thing that impresses me most is they have this additional feature that is exclusive to certain PS3 titles that, you know, are probably going to have to be written to support it, that allow you to do, that allow you to have like a local two-player mode without splitting the screen.
Yeah, ostensibly what it is instead of blinking the 3D image left eye, right eye, it's blinking player one and player two. And so then on your glasses, instead of both eyes blinking back and forth, they're both blinking at the same time to whichever player you are.
Exactly. So then, you have two players with two pairs of glasses who, you know, so you can have like a two-player local game, but without a split screen. Like each player gets to see the full screen. You know, we still have the problem of the console still has to render the scene twice. Except, you know, now, you know, we don't have this kind of like little cramped having to play on only half the screen kind of problem.
Right.
I hear from people who've played with it on the show floor that there is some like pretty harsh ghosting.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's probably either due to the price or maybe the version on the show floor is in final hardware.
Right. Plus, I just want to point out that I had this idea years ago. Playing Mortal Kombat, I always thought it'd be great if there was a way when Reptile turned invisible, if you could somehow wear some glasses or something, that would let the person playing as Reptile still see him, but the person not playing as Reptile not be able to see him.
Yeah.
Which, again, you could do with this.
Yes,
so,
you could.
The world, you're welcome. All right, anything else from Sony that you wanted to talk about?
No, not from Sony.
Okay. Well, let's go to Nintendo. And
oh, do we want to go to Ubisoft since that was on the same day? Or are we going to go to Nintendo first? Then?
Let's do Nintendo first.
Okay,
we'll keep it to the big three first here.
Right on.
Let's see. So Nintendo, of course, announced their new console called the Wii U, which I understand what they're going for—the whole pronoun thing—but to me, it just sounds like a university.
Yep. Well, it was funny because in the days leading up to in the days leading up to E3, the rumors that I'd heard and I think what I was kind of hoping for was the possibility that they were just going to name it the Nintendo Entertainment System.
In the
spirit of all the reboots that are now kind of a hot thing. The idea of calling it the Nintendo Entertainment System.
I haven't heard rumors to just Nintendo.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Yeah,
so
and, you know, and even then, you know, because I think that would kind of make sense considering that a large portion of their audience is the kind of person who calls every game console a Nintendo.
Right. Well, back in the day, Nintendo was like the Band-Aid of video games. They were all Nintendo.
Exactly. Yeah. You just call them. Oh yeah. Did you see that new Nintendo that Sony came out with? No. It's just this kind of. that was the word that you used. You know, the way that the way that rollerblade became synonymous with inline skates, and the way that Kleenex became synonymous with tissues. And that was just kind of the way it went.
I guess we should say what it is. Basically, it's a console that is graphically on par with the PS3 and 360. It's got HDMI out, 1080p, using proprietary 25-gigabyte discs. Strangely to me, no hard drive. It does have some measure of flash memory, but it will have USB ports that you could hook up an external hard drive to.
Yes.
Because they are going to have downloadable games.
And the same SD card slot as the, as the vanilla would be.
Right. And then the controller is like everyone figured. It looks like a classic controller with a touchscreen thrown in the middle.
Yeah.
It's like a 6-inch touchscreen. It's not high def. And somewhat to my disappointment, it's resistive, not capacitive, meaning it's basically the same touchscreen tech as a DS. It's not like a multi-touch like the iPod Touch. So, I mean, you still primarily will be using a stylus because from what I read on the floor, again, finger tracing just doesn't work that well on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It looks freaking huge. That's because it is, but according to Mike, who played it, it's surprisingly comfortable. The cool thing to me is that, you know, in addition to basically like this being like the home version of a DS, where you can have like secondary information on this screen while you're playing a game on your television, you can mirror whatever's being played on the TV to this screen. In theory, meaning I could be playing a game on the Wii U, and someone could walk in the room and be like, "Hey, hang on, I'm going to turn on the news." And I just go, okay, and I hit a button and start playing on the controller while they change the TV, and then they put it back, and I just pop it back up top.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of those, a lot of that feature set is, it seems to me, at least, to be very kind of, like, use, like use-specific. But, you know, it's still really cool that, you know, it enables all those things. I do feel like the kind of unfortunate part of that whole press conference was the fact that Nintendo didn't really do a very good job of communicating what this thing was. Just because they said, "Oh, hey, we're putting out a new console, and by the way, check out the controller. Look at this." And I mean, they didn't even show what the actual console looked like until they put like product images up on the website after the after the presentation. So they had a lot of people asking whether there even was a new console and if it was just a new controller.
Right. I mean,
which wouldn't be possible because you wouldn't be able to get a video feed from the regular Wii, but whatever.
But yeah, but like, I mean, the fact that the only game they announced for it was, another vague promise of a Smash Brothers game coming to this and the 3DS that'll play together somehow. And then Miyamoto mentioning that Pikmin's going to come out for this as well.
Yeah.
Like, you think they'd have something to show, something more tangible than what they had. I mean, they had some tech demos, and they were playable at the show. Mike played it. I'm sure he'll talk about it next week. I mean, they had, like, their sizzle reel, but then it was revealed that all the footage from that, for the most part, was from PS3
was
and 360
from,
games. And this is what I wonder. Like, I think it's kind of neat. You know, it could be a lot of fun. It just feels like this whole thing is bad timing to me. Because, you know, you feel like part of why they're bringing this out is to get, you know, everyone who's making multi-platform games to start putting those games on Wii U with, you know, their own unique Wii U features and attempt to get people to buy that version. But you gotta figure, this thing's gonna come out Christmas of 2012, 2 years later maybe, the next Xbox and PS and PlayStation come out. And then they're back behind the technology curve again.
Yeah.
Well, I almost feel like they should have just waited at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I have this feeling that, like, you know, Nintendo has, I think ever since the GameCube, Nintendo has kind of like tried to resist competing on a technology level, and you know, like, especially, you know, based on the reveal of the Wii U, Nintendo is very interested in selling the possibilities of the device, and I feel like making the console like as powerful or almost as powerful as a 360 or a PS3, is like, you almost get the impression that that still wasn't their priority.
Mm-hmm.
That it was just something that they did because, well, they might as well.
Right.
But what they really cared about was this new controller. And, you know, 1080p graphics with, you know, like, higher texture resolution and higher poly counts and all the same stuff that you get on the other two consoles. That was almost like, that was kind of gravy to them. So, yeah, like, you have to think that they'd be able to predict that. Like, you know, I can imagine that Nintendo knows that 2 years from now there will be new consoles from Sony and Microsoft that are going to be far more powerful than the Wii U is now. But I just get the impression that they don't care. You know, that it doesn't bother them because they know what side their bread is buttered on, so to speak.
Yeah. And again, when you talk about multi-platform games, and I said this about the Vita too, because people would say this. At least the Wii U will have two sets of shoulder buttons, but you're losing two buttons because the analog sticks do not click. Like, you think about playing Call of Duty. What's the second most used button aside from shooting that game? It's the run button, which is mapped to L3.
Yep.
Like, you're not going to have that on this system. How do you do it? You can't put on the touchscreen. You have to be able to use the analog sticks.
Yeah, I mean, controls are going to be problematic. I mean, even aside from the buttons, I think, you know, cross-platform controls are going to be problematic just because of the format of the controller. You know, like having your hand in a different position, reaching the buttons. I feel like the shoulder buttons and the triggers. I don't know if it'll be as easy to switch between them as it is on, like, you know, the 360 controller.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing too, they do not intend to sell this controller separately. Like, if you're going to play multiplayer, everyone else gets a classic controller.
Yeah, well, I think the from what I heard today, I'm under the impression that the console can only support one of those controllers at a time.
Right.
So, you know, you would only ever have one of them. I mean, the Wii U, like the console, the actual machine itself is kind of in a weird position because, you know, I mean, it's even in the name, it's still a Wii.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you look at the product images, the actual device looks a lot like
a Wii and a 360 had a baby.
Yeah, I mean, the
it was a big baby.
The impression that I got from it is that it looks like you stuck a bicycle pump in a regular Wii and just pumped it up a few times. And brought it up to like 60 PSI, and then, you know, it's a little kind of bulging at the sides. And, you know, it uses the same Bluetooth for the controllers. So what you're essentially doing is you are replacing your existing Wii in your, in your home theater setup or whatever. It uses the same Wiimotes. It uses the same nunchucks, the same classic controllers, the same everything. It just also has this additional controller with the screen in it. And you only ever have one of those, and then everybody else uses either Wiimotes or classic controllers or what have you.
Well, there is one reason to hang on to your old Wii, because this thing won't play the GameCube games
yes,
no more.
Yes, and that makes me really sad. I'm like, you know, kind of one of those rare devotees of the GameCube.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that system. I still think the WaveBird is one of the most comfortable controllers I've ever held.
Mm-hmm.
I have actually, because, you know, I'm packing up and getting ready to move, and I actually have like a whole stack of GameCube games, sitting across from me, like, you know, staring at me across the room. And, you know, now, of course, I have to, I'm gonna have to go back and you know, buy a GameCube again, so I can keep playing those games, which is, you know, which is really too bad. But hey, you know, it's whatever.
Yep.
At least, at the very least, if I go back to having a GameCube, I can put the I can put, you know, my WaveBird receivers on the front of it instead of having them kind of like awkwardly sticking out of
like
the top,
hanging off the top
of
yeah.
the way they do on the Wii. So
I was a little sad too to hear that this thing will not do any kind of up-resing for Wii games.
No, which is weird considering that as somebody somewhere mentioned it on Twitter, I don't remember who it was, that, you know, like we've seen Wii games up-res to 720p in emulators, and they look really good.
They do, yeah.
But you know, the thing is that up-resing console games is actually like a kind of a non-trivial thing. Because when you develop on a console, especially a console like the Wii that only supports one screen resolution, a lot of the, I mean, even just like the basic math that draws things to the screen kind of depends on a certain set of numbers. And if you were to suddenly make those numbers bigger, it, you know, it's not necessarily going to render everything at an increased resolution. You know, some things might get stretched to the bigger size, and then other things might be drawn at their original size in the upper left corner. you know, and I guess there's no real way to make that consistent across all Wii games. So I mean, it's kind of a bummer. I would have liked to see that, but
oh well.
Oh well. Shucks.
Yeah. So let's see what else. A bunch of 3DS games shown. Chief among them, Super Mario.
Yes.
You know, the Tanuki suit returns. This game looks hot.
Yeah.
Well, what's great is you know, the 3DS update came out on June 6th that let you, you know, get the virtual console in the eShop and everything. And they have all these trailers to download in 3D. So I got to see, you know, the Mario 3D, the trailer in 3D, the Zelda trailer in 3D.
Nice.
We had a new Luigi's Mansion game announced, which looks awesome. They showed some more of Paper Mario that's going to be coming out for the 3DS. The 3DS is going to ramp up. I mean, the problem with that system up to this point is there hasn't been, like, really a notable release aside from some LEGO games.
Yeah, there hasn't been a, there isn't enough of a software library right now.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, but, you know, that looks to be in good hands. They showed some Wii games. You know, we got Skyward Sword, of course. The new Kirby game, which looks awesome.
Yes. Skyward Sword looks gorgeous, by
yeah,
the way.
I love that art style. It's a great mesh of, like, everything they've done to this point,
yes,
almost.
Yes, exactly. It's a really, I mean, like, you know, a lot of the time I'm always kind of wary of stylistic compromise, but it's a really nice middle ground between, like, Wind Waker and Twilight Princess.
Yeah. And then, I mean, speaking of Zelda, you know, they've been hyping up the Zelda 25th anniversary this year. So, to celebrate, to start, as you mentioned, Link's Awakening DX, the Game Boy Color remake of the
God,
Game Boy Classic.
I love Link's Awakening so fucking
on
much.
The virtual console, on the 3DS. Man, that's the quickest $5 I've ever spent in my
yes.
life.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, that was,
so
that was the first thing that I did. That I, as soon as I installed the update, the first thing that I did was pick up Link's Awakening, because damn, because mm-hmm. Link's Awakening, dude, holy
it's
shit,
it's so good.
It is my favorite of the 2D Zelda games, and I know to devotees of Link to the Past, that's kind of sacrilege, but you know what, fuck you, I love that game.
let's see. So then they also announced, this has me pretty excited, they're also gonna be releasing in the 3DS in September for free
Four
Zelda Four
Swords.
Man, that's
yes.
awesome. That is great. That makes me happy.
Yep. And you know, and it's funny because I, you know, I remember when Nintendo opened their press conference with this huge Zelda retrospective. Like, you know, you kind of look at it, you're just like, oh, God, they're playing the nostalgia card. Is this really going to... Nah, there's no way you could... And then 30 seconds later, you've bought it. Hook, line, and sinker. Like, you're just in. Like, they have you, and there's no... One of my friends was like, Oh man, they're playing the nostalgia card. Well, they, you know, they've got another thing coming if they think, oh my god, I just threw my wallet at the stage. And you know, and the thing is that, like, on the one hand, you can kind of look at it and be like, ah, oh, that's kind of a dirty trick, right? But on the other hand, they know it.
Oh,
they know that we love that shit.
Well, I mean, let's be frank about it. The GameCube, the Wii, and let's face it, probably the Wii U for me are going to be my Zelda and Mario machines.
Yeah.
That's what they are.
I
agree completely. I'm fine with that in a strange way.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's the weird thing that, you know, I have a fair number of I have a fair number of Wii games that I, you know, that I really do like, but
they're all made by Nintendo.
Yeah, but you know,
I almost feel like it'd be convenient for me if Nintendo just pulled a Sega and became a software company.
Oh my god,
that'd be very nice, actually.
That would make things much simpler for us, wouldn't it?
Yeah, like, don't worry about making all these batshit crazy consoles. Just make Zelda on the 360 and crazy high def, and I'll be fine.
Yeah, well, it was funny watching the sizzle reel for the Wii U and seeing those maybe 7 or 8 seconds, just fleeting footage, just kind of thrown up there in passing of you know, Link in high def fighting that giant spider. And it was so funny that when I looked at it, the first thing that I thought was, I went back and remembered. I don't know if you remember this. I'm sure a lot of people saw it. When shortly after Twilight Princess came out, somebody went into the disc and ripped out all of the geometry, all of the characters and all of the environments and everything, and put them into Gary's Mod. And posed them and took these you know, sort of like fake high def screenshots of like Link on Epona, like charging through this like darkened forest, and there's one of Link and Zelda kind of like standing facing each other, holding each other's hands in this like kind of like waist high this kind of like waist deep pond in the middle of this kind of like murky forest and everything. And they looked absolutely gorgeous. The whole time I'm looking at it, like, when are we going to get a Zelda game that looks like this? And then there it was in that fucking sizzle reel. And I almost feel like somebody at Nintendo knew about those images, knew about those Gary's Mod screenshots, and was like, I'm going to take one shot from this demo, and I'm going to pose it exactly like one of those Gary's Mod shots. And it does look kind of eerily like it. And that made me happy. That, you know, again, I will happily, I have a 3DS, I don't own any retail games for it, and I will happily hold on to it for Ocarina of Time 3D. And, you know, I am going to, once again, happily buy a Wii U, because I know that there's going to be another Zelda game on it.
You know, there'll be the inevitable Mario game that does, like, yeah, I mean, I'll predict the Mario game for you right now. You'll play it up on the big screen. It'll be all, you know, great Mario Galaxy type stuff. You'll jump into a warp pipe,
and you'll be on the screen.
You run through a little 2D section in your hand. You jump back through that pipe and go back to the TV.
Back to 3D. Yep.
There you go.
I'll put money on that.
All right. Let's see. Anything else from Nintendo then you'd like to talk about?
I mean, vague references to another Pikmin makes me happy. One of the things that I did think was kind of interesting was the fact that they brought John Riccitiello on stage to, you know, kind of like speak on behalf of EA. You know, it was very non-committal, you know, not really saying anything specific. He did say a couple of things which at the time I thought might have been these kind of vague references to the possibility that Nintendo was outsourcing the online infrastructure of the Wii U to EA, which I later found out was not the case. According to what I've read, Nintendo is basically doing the same thing with Wii U multiplayer as what Sony did on the PS2, where, you want to have a multiplayer game? Yeah, you fucking set up your multiplayer.
Well, that's, I mean, to kind of jump ahead a little bit, you look at Ubi's thing with Nintendo and Ghost Recon Online.
Yeah.
That's basically what they're doing. Like, they're going to have, like, a persistent friend code in Ghost Recon Online. Or not friend code, but username, rather.
Yeah.
Like, there won't be friend codes. But yeah. There's nothing, like, overall to the entire system.
Yeah. Which is... I don't know.
It's very PS2 of them.
Yeah, we'll have to, I guess we're going to have to see how that pans out. I mean, honestly, I don't think anything's going to come of it until the Wii U ends up with a must-have multiplayer exclusive. If and when that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that'll end up being, who the hell knows.
Promise you this, it probably won't be made by Nintendo.
No.
Unless they finally just go, oh yeah, we like money, and just make that Pokemon MMO. Charge the kids $10 a month.
Oh, man.
Don't know where that's been all these years.
It's...
Let's see.
Same limbo as Nintendo's entire online presence.
Yeah, there you go. Let's see, we brought it a couple times now. Let's talk about Ubisoft. In fact, why don't you talk about it? Because that tells me you know more about it than I do.
Okay, well,
top of your head.
You know, Ubisoft had their press conference between Microsoft and Sony. Their presenter was a very unfortunate gentleman with an extremely obnoxious attitude. If you haven't seen it, you inevitably will. One of the big memes of E3 was this guy, kind of like trying to do this like this time machine sound effect as part of this like you know Ubisoft 25th anniversary retrospective thing, and he was just doing this weird hand gesture, making this like doodly 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 noise, and
like Wayne's World.
It was it was pretty embarrassing. So Ubisoft's angle on their whole press conference was that it's the 25th anniversary of Ubisoft. Mm-hmm. Yves Guillemot came out and, you know, he was saying, this is the 25th anniversary of Ubisoft when I started this company with my boss in 1986, you know. All this. And, you know, so it was... It was very much about the Ubisoft's kind of established franchises. One of the gags that Ubisoft used as part of their presentation was when they were announcing new games, what the presenter did was, you know, he would say, and this next game coming up, I wonder what this game would have looked like if we had released it 25 years ago. And then, you know, then he would do his obnoxious little doodly-doodly-doodly-doodly thing. Mm-hmm. And then the screen behind him would show footage of, you know, some, like, fake little mock-up of an old 80s-style retro version of the game that they were about to announce. You know, when he was announcing Driver San Francisco, they showed this, like, you know, a little, like, kind of pixelated, almost looked like Namco Rally X, kind of, like, you know, little city grid, cars driving around, jumping over each other, whatever. When they showed Ghost Recon Future Soldier, they showed this, like, you know, old 80s, like, almost kind of like XCOM-style turn-based strategy thing that was all, like, kind of raw polygons and all pixelated. When they were showing Assassin's Creed Revelation, it was this kind of Prince of Persia-style side-scrolling thing. And the unfortunate thing is that I wanted to play those fake retro mock-ups more than I wanted to play the games they actually announced.
Oops.
Like, you know, they were showing Ghost Recon Future Soldier... And they announced it with a really sweet-looking fake XCOM clone that I really wanted to fucking play. And then instead, they showed Ghost Recon Future Soldier, which looks pretty cool, I guess.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that cool little turn-based XCOM shit. A lot of the promo footage, like especially for the new Ghost Recon. Was very, you know, it was very kind of like on rails and It was just, I don't know. I mean, again, it's not up my alley at this point. The highlight for me, well, I mean, I guess there were two kind of major highlights for me. Was one of the first game that they showed actually, which Guillermo himself introduced, as opposed to their obnoxious Mr. Caffeine, as he called himself. He was talking about, okay, Ubisoft is 25 years old, and what better way to celebrate this anniversary than by going back to the first character we ever created? So he brings.
Your French accent's really
Yeah,
good.
well, it's, when I was working at Atari, we used to make fun of the guys at Infogrames all the time, and so, just started doing that voice. But he brings out Michel Ancel, who
Oh
is,
boy.
oh my
I don't want to
God, like
talk
as
about.
soon as he comes out, I'm just like, oh my God, fucking, like, he's like, he's part of my holy trinity, and he steps out and he introduces Rayman.
Oh my God, this game looks so
Holy
good.
shit. Okay, and forget how good this game looks, right? Yes, it is a gorgeous game. And yes, the animation is, I mean, it looks great in screenshots. It looks beautiful animated. The motion, the way everything's drawn, the way it moves, everything perfect. But he and his lead programmer picked up a pair of controllers and started actually playing the game. And the game is a fucking riot.
I
Oh
know.
my God. Just, I mean, like, sheer, just absolutely batshit insane platforming. With a lot of inertia. I mean, there are bits of kind of like curved platforms that throw you into the air that have a little bit of this kind of like Fancy Pants Adventures kind of feel to them, where
A little bit of Sonic the
yeah,
Hedgehog.
using a lot of inertia, flying around all over the place, a lot of really precise jumping, weird, silly little gags. Like there's a level that takes place in a kitchen, and you're like jumping across cookware, and like, eggs are cracking, and you're kind of dodging the yolks as they're falling. Like pairs of hands are coming in the top of the screen and cracking ice cube trays. Oh, like over the top of the screen, and so the ice cubes are falling from the top of the screen in the shape of Tetris blocks, and you have to jump across the Tetris blocks to get from one. It just e like every single second of this game was just fucking loaded with creativity, and of course, Michel Ancel, being the like super rad dude that he is, was like, you could tell that like he was having an absolute blast playing his own game on this stage in front of like thousands of people. It was a really wonderful thing to see. I was already excited about Rayman Origins, but now I am like, I cannot fucking wait for this game. It's a
I
day
know, it's
one
gonna be
purchase.
so good.
They announced that they're actually going to be putting it out on disc at retail.
Yeah.
It's no longer just a downloadable title because there's just too much cool shit that they had to put in there. So that, yeah, I'm definitely really, really happy with that. I mean, it's amazing that that game is being made with, like, basically a skeleton crew. I mean, it's like, maybe a dozen people working, which I think is why it's managed to sort of retain that spark. The other kind of big reveal that got me excited was, and actually, before I tell you what the game is, I'm going to kind of like describe to you what I saw. The game opens up and you're on a tropical island. You're kind of walking through the jungle, and it's a first person game, and the player gets to the edge of a cliff, and he's looking out across this big village, and there's like beautiful mountains in the background and everything. And he takes out a camera and raises the camera to the screen, and you're looking down the lens of an SLR, and he's taking photos of these, I guess, like, mercenaries, just these armed thugs that are like massacring this like entire village. And he's shooting photos of this, and the whole time I've seen this, I'm like, oh my god, it's a fucking photojournalism game. They're actually fucking making this. Holy shit. I've always wanted to see a photojournalism game. Turns out that wasn't what it was. The character takes the camera away from his face and then turns to one side, and, you know, just in time to see a dude slam a rifle butt into his face. And the player finds himself kind of tied up, sitting on the ground, while this dude is kind of standing over him, giving this, you know, giving this like really kind of insane speech about the definition of insanity. It's actually a pretty sweet monologue, actually. You know, pretty convincingly crazy. Of course, you know, the game is Far Cry 3.
Yes.
But, you know, I mean, just that dialogue I thought was delivered quite well, and the guy was definitely convincingly crazy. You know, anybody who's heard me talk about Far Cry 2 knows what a fucking masterpiece I think that game is. And
we're going to talk about that later, actually.
Yeah, I think we should, because I know Mike is not fond of it.
yeah, that'll come up later.
But yeah, you know, I loved Far Cry 2, and even though most of the design team of Far Cry 2 is now elsewhere, Clint Hawking is now at LucasArts instead of Ubisoft. But you know, I'm still pretty excited to see whether or not the team that remains at Ubisoft is going to stick to the sort of open sandbox design of Far Cry 2, or if they're not only going back to Tropical Islands, but they're also going back to the design of Far Cry 1. You know, that we'll have to wait and see for that, but I'm still excited nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But yeah, I mean, other than that, yeah, and then of course, you know, Assassin's Creed Revelations, which yeah
it's gonna
really
be hot.
Really cool.
So let's see. I mean, EA had their presser. There's a lot of
Battlefield 3. Yes.
Battlefield 3. They won't even let Bobby Kotick in to play it.
Which is, yeah, all right, yeah, that's cute, but I don't really know if I agree with that necessarily. The game does look absolutely
stunning. Does look good. Not gonna lie, kind of want to build a new PC for that one.
Yeah.
let's see. So I mean, there's gonna be we're already an hour and a half into the show almost. Yeah. So I think we'll kind of leave it there. We'll let Mike kind of give a more general floor report when he gets back, since he's actually there. So I just want to hit real quick. I just thought it was worth bringing up to mention that Apple also had their WD.
Yeah, the Worldwide Developers Conference.
That's the one, WDCC or WDDC. Yes, revealing iOS 5. Of note to us is the updates to Game Center. They're going to have, you know, they're basically beefing that up. You know, achievements are going to have points. There's going to be friends of friends. You can actually find people in the damn thing. And there's going to be the iCloud syncing and everything like that. So, yay.
Yay.
But yeah, so what I'm going to do now, and this is going to be our community question this week. So I'll ask you first, George. Mm-hmm. What is the one thing to come out of E3? Be it just a piece of news, a game announcement, a trailer, whatever. What is the one thing that has you the most excited?
I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of things that I'm excited about, but I think,
well, here's the beauty part, because we run the show, you can have two or three.
Well then. as trivial as it probably sounds, I think an Xbox version of Minecraft is a really big deal. The thought of being able to play Minecraft at a smooth frame rate is pretty awesome. Because, I mean, I have an absolute monster of a PC, and it still chokes on Minecraft, just because it's Java. It's the nature of the beast. And, you know, I feel like Minecraft is a great multiplayer experience, and I think being able to use Xbox Live for that will help that be a more common thing. So yeah, Minecraft on Xbox 360 is a big one. You know, like Wipeout 2048, just having another Wipeout game. Yes, awesome, super happy. And I don't know. Well, see now, now like I'm turning it into like four things, but I mean, you know, the Dust 514, obviously, because I am an Eve fanboy and I am not religiously attached to the PC platform. And Rayman Origins. Oh my fucking god, what a beautiful fucking game. Holy shit. If you have not seen footage of Rayman Origins in motion, go and fucking watch this. You could, like, game trailers, IGN, YouTube, like fucking whatever, and just watch videos of Rayman Origins and then try to resist the urge to just run out of your house, take your wallet out of your pocket, and like throw it in a vaguely easterly direction in the hopes that it might get across the Atlantic and land in Montpellier, France.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was going to be mine, Rayman Origins. I mean, I watching that trailer, I just sat there with this stupid grin on my face the whole time.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's such a positive game.
It's just so joyous.
There's so much, like, there's so much positive energy there. I love that.
So, I mean, that was the big one. And honestly, for me, and, you know, Mike and I talked about it, too. And we talked on the phone the other night. Sonic Generations is going to be good, I think. For real this time.
You think so?
I think he said so. I trust him. He was at the Sonic party. He was drunk, but
well,
he played the game when before that. But I don't see what could go wrong with this one.
Well,
famous last words that I think I've uttered before, but still, just it feels like they finally get it. They finally get it.
I hope so.
All the
what
reports
I saw
that the 2D levels play like old school Sonic did, just in 3D, which is what I've been wanting since Sonic and Knuckles. And then the 3D parts are basically like, I mean, here's the thing, like Cityscape for Sonic Adventure 2, the ocean level for Sonic Adventure, the last level for Sonic Adventure 2, I liked those a lot. Like, a lot. Mm. It was just all the other bullshit that I hated. And this is just, you know, all the good stuff from all the new Sonic games. You know, there's no Werehog. There's no crap.
Yeah.
It's just, it's the good stuff. So, God, I just hope it's good. Please let it be good.
I do appreciate the fact that they seem to have trimmed the fat a bit.
Yeah. And then, I mean, the other thing, too, is just I'm actually really looking forward to Forza 4.
Yeah.
For something about that game, it's got me excited. And it's weird, because I do not traditionally like, you know, the hardcore racers. I like the Forza series, just you know, in general. I've owned them all. I play them, not even to a great degree, but I do like to tool around with them. But this one has me really stoked for some reason.
Must have been the Kanye.
That must be it. them rhythms and rhymes.
I'm living in the 21st century, doing something mean to... Okay, I'm done.
See, the thing is, when I hear that song, I hear, you know that guy Freddie W, who does, like, all the crazy YouTube videos?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you seen his Power Hour video?
No, I haven't.
He got a guy to do a spoof of that song about Power Hour, which, for those of you who don't play drinking games, it's where you're supposed to do a shot of beer every minute for an hour.
Jesus.
And he attempted to create this, like, motion painting of a frat party. And you should just go see this thing. It's pretty glorious, actually. But, yeah, so I'll put that up on Facebook. Everyone can share what about E3 has them excited thus far. In the meantime, let's go back to last week's questions. You know, we there are a lot of HD remakes and such coming out of E3. You know, we've got, you know, the Halo one. We've got the God of War PSP games, the Eco Shadow Colossus, Metal Gear Collection, Silent Hill Collection, all kind of collections. So we asked, what one game would you like to see an HD remake or re-release of? Jeff Grubb responds with Karnov, in all caps. Dammy, oh boy, now I'm going to make Mike sound more eloquent. Anafawoken, there we go, that wasn't so bad. With a very excellent answer, two excellent answers, I mean. Skies of Arcadia Legends full remake, with a lot of exclamation points. And then, this is why I like this person, also yes on Crimson Skies, because damn it, we need more
Fuck
Crimson Skies.
Yes!
Thank you! See, I knew you'd be on board with this.
Hell yeah, dude! The closest we got was
so good.
Well, I mean, Warhawk was pretty similar, actually. The flight mechanics, like
gameplay wise,
the flight mechanics. Like Warhawk
had like the gameplay,
like
and like you know, you were kind of hoping Dark Void was going to feel like sort of like a sci-fi spiritual successor, but it just didn't. Mm-mm. Even though it should have. So yeah, we need Crimson Skies, please. Did I tell you I found like I don't even know where I got it, but I keep the file in my Dropbox just in case, like a zip file that basically fixes the original Crimson Skies to work in Windows 7.
Really?
Yes, I'll share this with you.
Shit.
It works perfectly.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I didn't know such a thing was possible.
It took me forever to find this thing, because I bought like an old, like I bought a copy of this online like a year and a half ago to find it does not work. I spent a month while I tracked this thing down.
Man, that is mm-hmm. awesome.
Yes. Anyway, moving on. Timothy Wilcoxon. Goldeneye. Oh wait, they tried that.
Yeah.
But then he has actually a fun answer. Blast Corps for the N64.
Fuck yeah, dude!
I loved Blast Corps.
Blast
Corps
was
the
shit! God, that game was so good.
I know. And then our old buddy here, Shamrock. Since Guardian Heroes has already been announced, my vote goes for Panzer Dragoon Saga. This would give people a chance to play without having to pay extortion-level prices for the Sega Saturn version. I never finished it, so an HD remake would give me incentive to start over. P.S. My name is not pronounced Shamrock, which, again, I take no responsibility for anything Mike says about anybody on this show. And would like to take this time, now that he's not here, to apologize to anybody he may have offended. Again, it's not me. And then I also wanted to throw out, Shamrock also said, Kevin Van Damme is the whole effing boat. I'm not sure why. That was just a random post on our Facebook page. But then Dammy had this to say about Mike in Far Cry 2, so I thought you'd like to hear this as well, George.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, you're playing Far Cry 2 long after it came out. When that game came out, it was graphically astounding, and the emergent gameplay possibilities were just so much fun. For sure, the game is flawed in many ways, tons of features cut, but I had so much fun plotting how I would assault the next compound, experimenting with all the different weapons, and basically immersing myself in the African landscape. Yes, it does get repetitive, but I did play it through completion and mostly enjoyed my experience.
Yep, I agree with that 100%.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I mean, I played a pretty good chunk of it. I rented it for the 360 and like played it for like a couple weeks. Honestly, the thing I hated the most about the game was how you just randomly got sick.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's like... The funny thing about that stuff is that Far Cry 2 was kind of designed with the mentality of the, you know, kind of like Deus Ex Thief style immersive sim. Mm-hmm. In the sense that it was, obviously this was, you know, kind of compromised later in development for the sake of accessibility, but the philosophy of the game is very brutal and unforgiving. And things like that, that's just, you know, that's just how it is. Like, that's why, if anybody knows of Ben Abraham's permadeath story, in which he played through Far Cry 2 with the self-imposed limitation that if he died, it would be done. Like, his playthrough would be finished. So, you know, playing on permadeath mode, basically approaching it like an old roguelike. Approaching it like you were playing Rogue or NetHack or any game of that ilk where you only have one life and, you know, the world is simulated to a level of detail that can like completely fuck with you without warning. Far Cry 2 was like, I get the feeling that at least in the beginning, it was meant to be like that. And, you know, the malaria was just one of the things that kind of stuck around after that. but it is a really brutal game. It is a game that will unapologetically shit on you. And, you know, it's just a matter of whether or not, you're the type of gamer who wants to play a game and do that to you. And, I am that type. That's why I play.
All right. All right. So thank you everyone for your responses. Keep them coming, because as you've probably learned by now, if you type something in our direction, we will read it on this show and make you feel like an internet superstar such as myself.
Yeah.
Let's see. So let's, for tradition's sake here, we already talked about playing Zelda Link's Awakening DX. Anything else you played of note the last couple of weeks here, George?
Well,
aside from pack your shit and move across the country,
yeah, that's
which I played that game. It's fucking hard.
Yeah, no, that game's a pain in the ass. I gotta say, I'm not really a fan of that one. But let's see. Lately, yeah, I mean, obviously, Link's Awakening DS on the DS. Oh my god. I mean, I boxed up my consoles about 2 weeks ago. So you know, I've been on my PC, kind of just playing a little bit of Eve, a little bit of Minecraft on and off, because, you know, I mean, they're things that I can kind of jump in and out of fairly easily.
Mm-hmm.
I did play through almost all the way through Portal 2 co-op with my girlfriend Mitu, and
awesome.
That was awesome.
I still need to finish the co-op. I just haven't gotten the chance to with Mike or Chris.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, I also had the benefit of having the best partner in science that anyone could ever have.
That is true. That, like, actually is objectively true.
It's,
so good job.
Yeah, well, you know what? It is, like, there's something about playing a co-op game with someone with whom you are, like, madly, like, head over heels in love, that makes every game better. Like, you know, it seems like kind of a corny thing to say, but it's absolutely true. You know, she and I both have this, you know, kind of perverse love for the, like, goofy, like, vague homoeroticism of Gears of War. And playing that game co-op with her is an absolute fucking blast. just because, you know, we get to, like, you know, kind of turn to each other and make dick jokes. Which is always good.
Yes, a healthy relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
Is,
you know what?
Founded
like,
on dick
you,
jokes.
Like, if you and your girlfriend can make dick jokes, while playing Gears of War, you found the one, man. That's all I gotta say. but yeah, so you know, we played through Portal 2 co-op. Have been thoroughly enjoying that. We've actually also kind of been slowly working our way through a playthrough Titan Quest.
Nice.
Which I had actually never played.
I've dabbled with it. I think I own it because, like, one day, like, all the Titan Quest games were like $3.
Yeah, I mean,
it was
probably like one of the THQ specials. I think that's how I got it. Also,
I have all these games I didn't even know I own. Like when Far Cry 2 was on sale, and like Mike was like, "Oh, I'm gonna get this." I was like, "Yeah, for $5, I'm gonna get it too." And I was like, "Oh, I already have it."
Yeah.
I didn't know I owned this game.
Yeah, that's happened to me a couple of times. But yeah, I mean, you know, I haven't been playing as many games as I usually do, just because I've been occupied with stuff. And actually, before we go to what you've been playing, I just do want to interject that when are we gonna get a fucking HD re-release of the Soul Reaver games? God damn it.
I'm sorry.
Soul Reaver 2, and Defiance. Let's just get all those, get three of those, and just slap them on a Blu-ray, and let's do it. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's fine. It was rude of me not to ask you, actually. You should have gotten a chance.
It's cool.
So now we know your answer.
There it is.
All right, so let's see. Yeah, I mean, when the 3DS eShop came out, you know, I got Zelda. But before that, because it wasn't out right away, I did get Mario Land, the Game Boy original,
Super
as well, because I've got an old soft spot for that game.
Yeah.
See, I like the way they handle the virtual console games, because the bottom screen is just basically kind of like a virtual console menu. But like any emulator, you can create a save state at any point, which is nice.
Wait, you can do save states with the...
Yeah, you just tap the bottom screen.
Shit.
Yeah, because trying to push all four buttons together to do the save screen and on a 3DS for Link's Awakening is really hard.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so just make save states. You can only have one, but it's all you
still
need.
That's
yeah,
fucking
it's awesome.
Bad. Yeah, yeah. I guess like I now that I think about it, I haven't even looked at the bottom screen.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. So because I got Borderlands Game of the Year Edition on Steam, I was given early access to the Duke Nukem Forever demo.
And
I don't like it at all. At all.
Here's
how it goes. So you start the demo and oh boy, I'm peeing in the air and all of that. That was funny when I was 12. And okay, they recreated the thing where you fight the thing on the football field. All right, all I'm doing is just circle strafing and shooting a bajillion rockets at this thing till it's dead, and that's it. Okay, that's over. Oh, there's the twins who are giving me a blowjob that, you know, everyone's been talking about that for a year now, so that's not shocking in any way. And we're going to have a loading screen. Okay, I'm in a monster truck, and the controls suck. And now I'm out of gas, so I have to go find a gas can. And what the hell? I can only carry two guns at a time? This is Duke Nukem. Like, the whole point is, like, you get all these wacky guns that you fuck around with. Okay, well, great. So, at this point, my arsenal, I have the shotgun and the shrink ray. But I'm getting surrounded by pig cops. I only have the shrink ray out because I don't have time to reload my shotgun, and I get killed instantly. And nice. I turned it off after that because I was like, this is kind of boring.
Damn.
You know, I mean, half the fun of this game was fucking around with stuff, but they kind of took that away from you. The shooting felt imprecise. Like, it felt like a straight PC port where there was absolutely no aim assist for the console. So that was just kind of, it felt loose and untuned. You know, it doesn't look good. I don't know, maybe I should try it again. Maybe it was in a bad frame of mind or something when I played it, but I just didn't enjoy it at all. Not a lick of it. Which I didn't think, like, I was going to play this game and be like, finally, this is fucking worth the wait. But...
Yeah, well, there was no way that any game was ever going to be worth that long of a wait.
Right. Frankly, if anything, it kind of just makes me play this and go, really? They couldn't do this in 15 years? Like, why was this so hard to make?
Hey, man, I don't know. The thing, I think, to me, like, the thing that has kind of defined my, like the way I look at Duke Nukem is just the way that the way that like their marketing has been so like unapologetically immature.
Mm-hmm.
That like, you know, and they kind of cover it up with this kind of like flag waving nostalgia, but I mean, it's like, come on, really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when Randy Pitchford goes on the record saying that reviewers who don't like this game will be held accountable. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
It's nothing. It's just him talking, and that's all it needs to be, yeah. You know?
Ugh.
But yeah, let's see. Did I play anything else this week, Ben? I'm trying to remember now. I don't think so. So that's it. Let's talk about upcoming releases, because there's an upcoming release I'm very excited about. So let's see. First, we got Duke for 360, PS3, and PC. Alice Madness Returns,
yeah.
Also on those systems. Wii Play Motion, which is, you know, it's going to have a Wii Motion Plus controller with it for those of you who need a controller on your Wii. And then, and I almost forgot this is coming out next week, Child of Eden on the Xbox 360.
Yeah!
Fuck yes.
Fuck yeah!
Think I've made my love of this game after PAX pretty well known, and man, am I stoked. And it's only $50.
Really? It's only 50?
Yeah, it's not 60. It's
fuck
50.
Yeah.
I know. Tom's and I think my employee discount will still be good at Best Buy by the time this comes out.
Awesome.
So, yeah. So, yeah. You expect to hear me talk about that next week in a very excited manner. Let's see. Magic the Gathering Duels of the Planeswalkers 2012 for PC, PS3, and Xbox 360. Transformers Dark of the Moon for 360, PS3. Panzer Corps for the PC. The Transformers Dark of the Moon Stealth Force Edition for the Wii and 3DS. Wipeout in the Zone, which is a Kinect game based on Wipeout, which is on demo at Best Buy. I should try it. Record of Agarest War Zero for the PS3 and Xbox 360. I'm assuming Atlas had a hand in this, based by the
probably,
box art.
Probably, yeah.
Oh, what else? Dark of the Moon Autobots for DS and Cubic Ninja for the 3DS. Okay, so... Everyone go buy Child of Eden, because that game's
yes.
awesome.
Child of Eden is.
Have you gotten to play it yet?
I have not gotten to play it.
Oh my god! See, that's the thing. I mean, to hear about it conceptually, like, yeah, it's a spiritual successor to Rez. You know, you understand academically how these Kinect controls work with the two hands, but like I said, I played this thing at PAX up on a huge stage with all this noise and everything. And you know, you play Rez; it's a very trance game. It's the kind of game where you kind of want to dim the lights, yeah, turn up the sound, and just get into it. So I kind of wondered if I could even do that at PAX, and man, I sit in front of this TV, standing in front of this crowd, and because I was at the one demo station that had what you were playing on a giant screen behind you, so they could kind of show it off.
Yeah,
man, everything just melted away. It was just me being in that game.
That is...
And I've never felt more connected to a game than I did playing that. I mean, it just melted away to where it was basically like if you just took Rez, move the camera into Rez's head, and then you were Rez. That's what this felt like to me. It's going to be
nice.
So awesome. It's the first time you do the bomb clearing attack, and to do it, you just throw your hands in the air and thrust them forward. It's awesome. It's so cool.
Oh man, I can't wait to play this.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, my girlfriend and I, like, we've both been like really, really excited for this because like a lot of her academic research has been on embodiment. And like Child of Eden is this like perfect, it's like the perfect poster child for, you know, like for the kind of, you know, for the kinds of games that like she's interested in making and the, you know, the things that she's researching. And we both like absolutely love Mizuguchi.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're just waiting to play it. I actually submitted a photo of us, to their, that little like contest
yeah.
Where you could like submit a photo to that.
I'm trying to remember if I sent a picture of that or not. I want to say I did.
Yeah, I sent one. I had. Yeah,
of course. Of course. So let's see. So yeah, so that'll happen and more. So you should listen to the show next week in addition to this one. Where you
damn
can find it will be at explodingbarrel.wordpress.com. At the iTunes Music Store and the Zune Marketplace, and be sure to partake in Let's Go Topical 2.0 at our Facebook page at facebook.com/explodingbarrel. George, you want to plug anything?
No, I mean, just, you know, you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/gkakoros. You know, of course, anything that I say on Twitter does not represent the views of Microsoft Game Studios.
Yeah,
disclaimer. All that,
just,
you know,
put that in your bio.
Yeah, no, it is there. You know, just making that clear, of course. And and yeah, I have a blog at burningnorth.com, which I have not touched. So I'm not going to plug that just yet until I start writing for it. But AJ, thank you for.
Thank you for joining me, sir. Yeah, I was going to say, for those of you who've been lamenting that we haven't had quite as long shows anymore, you're welcome.
Yeah, that's yeah, sorry.
And now I'm trying to remember how Mike signs these things off, but so I'll just say thank you for listening, everybody. Have a fantastic week, and we'll see you next time.
Later.
Right here on the Exploding Barrel Podcast. That's what he says.